Blog Talk Radio.
So, I am back. Now, Sean, I have to ask, did you miss me last week?
Well, I didn't miss you because I was in Chicago and we didn't have a show. So,
Right.
I didn't miss you at all.
But did you miss me in general?
It's hard not to miss you. I mean, really, it's you see, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing. It's hard not to miss some part of you. It could be good, it could be bad. There's always a mystery going on. But it was hard not to miss you. So when I was thinking about who am I going to talk to about the French Open when I know absolutely nothing about it, yeah, I miss you. When I was thinking about who am I going to talk to about the Rangers and the fact that they stink, no, I didn't miss you at all because you would have added nothing to the conversation. So
that is probably
true. Open yet, NHL, no, World Cup, well, that's next week, so I didn't miss you yet. But overall, yeah, I'm glad you're back, and I hope you had a restful spite in Costa Rica, and I hope you brought me back a shirt.
I did, and I did. And I did. Welcome back to the
wow.
show, everybody. Seth and Sean, Sports Radio, off of backsportspage.com. Yes, I myself and the little lady spent a nice, relaxing week in Costa Rica. Half of it in a tree, staying in a tree farm, in a tree house. Half of it on an all-inclusive beach. It was not bad. And the only disappointing part for me was there was 8,000 stations, but there was no ESPN, so I couldn't see the end of the French Open. I could not see the first game of the NBA Finals, and I followed what was going on in the NHL Finals, but to be honest, if I could hang out on a beach, which was 85 degrees, or I can sit in my room and watch two teams I don't root for, I chose the beach.
Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, let's catch Seth Kamen's up. Rafael Nadal won the French. The Rangers stink and they're down 3-0. And the Spurs and Heat are tied at 1-1. So you didn't have to watch very much. There you go. You got it all.
Well, I could have told you Rafael Nadal was going to win the French Open 6 months ago. Considering
he's 56 and... the French? Why are you bitching and moaning about watching the French? You knew it.
I'm not bitching and moaning. But to watch Nadal Djokovic is always something special. But Nadal being 56-1 on the French clay is somewhat ridiculous. It's almost funnier to say than anything else. Until Djokovic beats him there, no one will ever pick against Nadal on clay until it's proven otherwise. Here is my question. Now, what I understand. The Rangers have actually played relatively well in this series, blowing 2-2 goal leads and losing in overtime the first two games. And then I did see game three yesterday. I watched the second and third periods, and they were outplayed. But has it been the Rangers have been that bad, or the Kings have been that good, or just is it just that Jonathan Quick is the best goalie in the world and has been playing like it?
Well, there are three things that definitely, and if you'd like to call in 760-283-0846, our question of the week will be, what sports venues are on your bucket list? And we'll talk about that at the bottom of the hour at 7:30. Gives you enough time to call in if you'd like, or find us on Facebook at Seth and Sean Sports Radio, or on Twitter at Seth and Sean. But let me answer your question. There are three things that I absolutely hold to be true after this week in sports. Number one, LeBron James is the greatest player of all time. No doubt, in my mind. That's number one. Number two, Rafael Nadal is the best clay player of all time. Number two. And number three, Jonathan Quick is the best goalie in the NHL. And those three things are, I believe, to be factual. They're subjective, obviously, but I hope
you believe unequivocally LeBron James is the greatest player of all time.
I do. After this week, after watching him against the Spurs, I do. I really, really do. Because And we'll get. Let me answer your question about about the Rangers, and we'll get to the Spurs and the Heat in a little bit, because I think one thing before another. Jonathan Quick has played out of his mind. Okay, for those people that did not see him in the Olympics, TJ Oshie, and I think and the fourth thing is Doc Emmerich is the best announcer in sports, as far as I'm concerned, play-by-play announcer. But that's besides the point. So for those that did not see the Olympics and see U.S. play Russia, Doc Emmerich brought up this nice little tidbit last night. Everybody remembers TJ Oshie and the fact that he put in all those goals. People don't remember that Jonathan Quick saved all those shots. Jonathan Quick was the number one goalie in the U.S., and granted, I thought Jimmy Howard was going to be at the beginning of this year, so I take that on the chin. But he has played on his head. Last night was unbelievable. But to answer your question, have the Rangers been outplayed? I said this at the beginning of the playoffs, and I'll say it again. It's kind of like the West in the NBA versus the East, except for the Heat. They play at a different level. They play at a different speed. My friend Ryan DeSarno, who was texting me last night, was saying, the Rangers just haven't gotten it going. No, that has nothing to do with it. They're just too slow. The Kings just play at a different speed. They are just better.
Now, is this as dominating? Now, do you believe that not only the Kings, but I assume you also that the Blackhawks probably would have beaten anyone in the East? The Blues,
absolutely.
The Sharks. Now, also, the Rangers, while on a good roll. Okay.
Maybe not the Sharks. I mean, their team, the Sharks are more of a East Coast-type team. They have bigger bodies, and the speed is not as apparent. The Blues and the Blackhawks, the Blackhawks are probably faster than the Kings. I mean, that was the best series I've seen, was the Blackhawks and Kings. So, I think if the Canadians lose to the Bruins, the Rangers aren't even here. I think the Bruins would have beaten the Rangers.
That's where I was going with this. Would the Bruins have been a better matchup than, forgetting a better matchup, you know, you're saying that the Blues and the Kings and the Blackhawks, all these teams would have beaten the Eastern Conference champion. Would they have beaten the Eastern Conference champion if the Eastern Conference champion was the Boston Bruins?
Yeah, I think so. I still think the speed was an advantage. I think it would have been closer, given that Boston has more speed, less of the – they have Patrice Bergeron, who is very fast. They have Brad Marchand, who is very fast, and they're able to keep up a little bit better. I think the Penguins could have kept up better than the Rangers. But that's the thing. You have to get through each of the conferences in order to get to this team, to get to the finals. So Eastern Conference play, the Rangers were better. But the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference play different styles of hockey, and always have. So, I mean, even go back to the Islanders and Oilers back in the 80s. The Islanders were a much more bruising team. And in the 80s, the Oilers came up, and they were just quick and fast and young. And they just dominated. And I still think that that's the same way today.
Fair enough. Is there any chance the Rangers are not – that this series is not – do you think this series ends tomorrow night?
No. I think they get one more – I think they get one game in the Garden. I got to tell you, even being an Islanders fan – towards the end of the game, probably 10 minutes left in the game, I was rooting for the Rangers to score a goal. One goal, not three goals, one goal. Because the Rangers just played, they were either outplayed last night, but I didn't see that. I just saw a very poor performance by that team. They were playing in that last 5 minutes with absolutely no urgency. And that they looked tired, and I don't know how they could be tired. So
Wait a minute. Now let's go back. They went seven games with Montreal. Six games or seven games?
Six games.
They went seven games with the Penguins.
Yep.
They went, I don't remember the first round series. Was it Philly?
Yep.
And I think they went 5 or 6 games there. Plus you had the Olympics.
Yep.
It's a long year.
I don't doubt that. Seth, that's not my point. My point is that they look tired compared to L.A.
Who went seven games with everybody.
Seven games
much.
In every series, had one less day off. They just looked tired, and they looked apathetic, if that makes any sense. And I find it hard to be apathetic in the Stanley Cup Finals. But that's the way they looked on the ice last night. And granted, I'm an armchair quarterback. I've never played in the NHL, obviously. I've never even played ice hockey. So, I mean, who am I to say that they were tired? But that's the way that they looked. So that's from a guy that's watching that's pretty much watched 80% of the NHL playoffs this year. So, I mean, granted, I haven't rooted for my team in one of those games, but I've rooted against every other team. So I don't know how you call me that, but whatever. So that's the way I see that. Tonight's playoffs, so I don't see that they get – I think they get one game and then they're gone once they get to L.A. on Friday. That's to answer your question.
Moving back to the NBA playoffs, you just made a comment saying, not really subjectively, you're saying objectively, that LeBron James is the greatest player of all time.
Yep.
Back it up.
Well, okay, so when people talk about leadership, when people talk about the greatest player of all time, they talk about three things. They talk about championships, talent, and leadership, right? Those would probably be the three things that people talk about the most. LeBron has shown all three of those, and he's taken – okay, so you remember the game where Jordan against – I think it was against the Lakers, right? He scored a three-pointer, and he was going back, and he was shaking his head as if –
No, that was
– I can't believe
that. No, that was actually in – the second championship, game one against the Portland Trailblazers in 1992.
Okay, Portland. Okay, I thought it was the first championship. Okay, sorry, the second championship. That's what LeBron looked like in the last game. There was no stopping him. Kawhi Leonard had as good defense as you could possibly have on a player with less than a second on the shot clock twice. And LeBron just hits threes. He had... when he came up and he was in his first 4 years, the argument against him or the criticism was he didn't have a jump shot. He was a driver. He was just a big body that overpowered everybody. Well, guess what? Just like Michael Jordan, he developed a jump shot. And that jump shot is as good as anybody in the game outside of probably Ray Allen and Kyle Korver right now. So he's got that. He's got two championships. He'll probably have a third. He's won scoring titles. He is the best player in basketball right now, and it's not even close to me. I don't care that Kevin Durant won an MVP. I don't care. Show me a guy that plays like LeBron James right now. There are none. He does everything. And he does it better than just about everybody. He does every facet of the game almost as well, if not better, than everybody else. And he's unselfish.
Yes. There was an old adage. It was a sports writer. Not a sports writer. It was actually a mystery writer, a guy named Scott Turow, who was from Chicago. He made a comment in the mid-90s that Michael Jordan played basketball better than anyone else did in the world did their jobs. And I think that's where you're going with LeBron. I don't put LeBron at that level. I don't put LeBron above Michael. I don't put LeBron above Bill Russell. But I understand the point. I was actually speaking with Nabatse Isles coming before the show. He has invited us, actually, for our listeners, and Sean doesn't know the specifics. He has invited us to do a two-part show with him. Nabatse does a show on Wednesday nights on Public Access, doing the Mount Rushmore of NBA teams, going through each NBA team in doing a Mount Rushmore and then debating it. But it was an interesting point, something for us to discuss at a later point. For those of you who did not listen to the Hall of Fame debate between Mr. Palmer and Mr. Isles, if you can find it in the archives at backsportspage.com, I highly advise it, at least the first 45 minutes. It was really good stuff. The last 10, 15 minutes I could have probably done without. I disagree with you on the shooting. That he's on a roll is great, but LeBron is certainly not a pure shooter in the Kyle Korver, Ray Allen sense. Yes, he's been shooting beautifully. He's playing at a magnificent level. He's one of the 10 best players of all time. Probably before it's done, he'll probably be in most people's top five, top three, somewhere in that range. I don't put him there yet. To argue the championships against Jordan with 6 and Russell with 11, even Kareem with 6 is a bit hard. But not saying, look, he's only 30, 31, something along those lines. So it's certainly not beyond the realm that he will be there. They're probably a slight favorite at this point to win it all. Although I certainly wouldn't count out San Antonio, and having picked San Antonio in 7 before the series, I don't see any reason to change that. Besides, every time I change something, it seems to go wrong. I just completely lost my
train
of thought.
But here's where I believe I said outside of Korver and outside of Allen.
But there are people who shoot in that capacity who are jump shooters, whose main reason for being in the NBA is their shooting ability. I don't put James at that level. But James is on a ridiculous roll. James is the best player in the world. Nobody debates that. Kevin Durant, I don't think, would debate that, having won the MVP, and deservedly so. But that doesn't change the fact that LeBron James is the best player in the world. I mean, Karl Malone won an MVP in 1997. Nobody thought Karl Malone was the best player in the world. People get tired of seeing the same thing over and over again.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. And that, look, the way I am a very hard judge of the best player ever. I always have been. Okay, until you show me a baseball player that can win 100 games and hit 714 home runs, you'll never get a better player to me than Babe Ruth, which will never happen. Different game, still will never happen, ever happen. I think that's actually the hardest record of all time, just trying to do both of those, because it just won't happen. Football player, find me a guy that's better than Jim Brown. I don't think it'll ever happen. Hockey player, find me a player that's better than Wayne Gretzky. Probably will never happen. Basketball is the one sport I think it may happen, and I think in my opinion, it probably has. If you're talking about how many championships a guy has won, well, wait till the end of his career and maybe he'll have 5. Maybe he'll have 6. Maybe he'll have 4. In a harder NBA than when Jordan played. And in a much harder NBA than when Bill Russell played. So that's where my contention lies. Okay, the concept that the NBA was much harder when Jordan or Russell played, I think, is a figment of somebody's imagination, because that's just not true. The NBA today has more talent in it than it ever did before, even with more teams. So,
I don't know if I agree with you on that. I don't know if I agree with you in that. I think the NBA of the 80s, the mid to late 80s, with the Bucks and the Spurs, not the Spurs, excuse me, the Bucks and the Celtics and the Lakers and the Sixers and the Suns, that late 80s, early 90s, I think was a better era of basketball than this.
But okay, and I guess that goes to the definition of better era. Okay, you had better teams. You had probably overall better teams. You had teams that distanced themselves a whole lot more than today. I agree with that. But I think you had also teams that sunk a lot more, too. I don't think
sunk
you had
more than
teams.
A Sacramento or an Orlando or a Philly?
Look, and Philly could win a game. I think that there were teams back then. I'll take the Timberwolves in the first year that they played. okay? The Timberwolves in the first year that they played, I think, won like 12 games, maybe. I'd love to go, I'm going to go look it up for next week's show and see who they beat. Because I guarantee you they didn't beat anybody. Anybody good. The 76ers, I think, in the first game this year beat somebody that went to the playoffs. There's talent there. I think with the advent, with more notoriety in the college basketball game, you have better talent in the NBA today than you ever have. That's just my opinion. And you have more teams than you ever have.
Well, I think part of the reason you have more talent is because you have an international aspect that wasn't available.
I agree with that, too. Wholeheartedly.
I think it's a different kind of – I think it's a better athlete now. I don't know if it's a better basketball player. They were not athletes. I've never seen
– Sorry, go
what? I have never seen an athlete. Okay.
Sorry, we keep talking over each other. Finish, and I will go. Sorry, my problem.
I have never seen an athlete like LeBron James. I mean, as great as Bo Jackson was, Bo Jackson wasn't 6'7", 240 and could do this. Deion Sanders wasn't 6'7", 240. You know, these guys were, you know, Bo Jackson was a wrecking ball at 6'1", 210, 6'2", 210, 220, whatever it was. You know, Deion was 5'9", it was 5'11", 160, 170. I don't know if I've ever seen an athlete like LeBron James. I concede that point. No, but kind of comparable to what you said, my father says the greatest athlete of all time is Jim Brown. He says there really isn't a discussion about it. I don't know if I'll ever be able, because of LeBron coming to Miami, I don't know if I'll ever be able to put him objectively above Jordan. I don't know if I can. You know, I've had the problem. I mean, obviously he's proven his greatness. I don't think that was ever really a doubt. And he may be more talented. He may be the most talented basketball player of all time. But I would find it difficult to ever see him as myself saying he's the greatest player of all time.
My issue, and there was one other thing that I failed to mention before. When you played in the 80s and the 90s, the early 80s, maybe even the late 80s, yeah, probably the late 80s too, the salary cap was not as big of a deal as it is today. So you were able, and especially in the 50s, where there was none, in the 50s you could get anybody you wanted, and there were super teams, which is what the Celtics were. I mean, the amount of talent that was on that team, I don't think will ever be touched in the NBA. Ever. And the concept being that when you play with better players, I mean, you said this before, you downgrade LeBron for going to Miami and playing with these guys. Look at the all-time greats that you're referring to. They all had super teams in one way, shape, or form. Kareem had super teams both in L.A. and in Milwaukee.
Russell, Kareem did not have – wait. Kareem did not have a super team in Milwaukee.
Oscar
Robertson was – Oscar was past his prime by 71. And there was
Oscar
no other superstar on that team.
Oscar averaged 20 points in 71.
He was past his prime in 71. He was not an all-time great at that year, at that point in his career. He had become an all-time great over the period. But I understand your point. But
let's take away 71. With the Lakers, he obviously had all-time greats, correct?
Yes, yes.
When he won 5 out of his 6 championships.
Yes.
Russell played with the super team of all time.
Yes.
By far. Okay, more Hall of Famers, more championships.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. Jordan played with 2 Hall of Famers.
Two. 1.5. Yeah.
Well,
at least.
Rodman
he's
and
the
Pippen
other
are both Hall of Famers.
Yeah, but he wasn't with Rodman for the first 3.
Correct. Okay. So he played with 1.5. I guess what my point is, they're all, you can see right now, Dwayne Wade is probably the Oscar Robertson right now. He's probably
right, but when the signage took place, he wasn't.
When he won his championship, it was.
Not the second year in? I don't know if I agree with you on that.
Last year?
No, the first championship.
The year before.
The year before.
Yeah, maybe.
But I guess my point is this, and this is what I've always kind of come back to with Matt, they all played with great players. You can't win a championship for the most part without great players. I understand that. I guess my issue was he went and played with supposedly his biggest rival.
Oh, I know. You and I have discussed this probably ad nauseum by now.
A zillion times, yeah. And there's no need to really discuss it again. Look, if he goes down as the third greatest player of all time or the fourth greatest player of all time, is that really that big of a deal?
No.
I don't know.
No, probably not. Okay, so moving on to other NBA news. So the Knicks, losing out on Steve Kerr, decided to focus their efforts on another point guard. Well, I don't think Steve Kerr is probably a point guard, but a point guard. So now there are two point guard coaches in the New York area. Do either one of these guys, Derek Fisher or Jason Kidd, win a championship before they're fired?
No. I mean, I don't see the Knicks as anywhere near a championship team. Golden State is in a much tougher conference. They're a much better team, but they're in a much more difficult conference. They have a much difficult
road. No, I said Jason Kidd, not Steve Kerr.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think you said Steve Kerr. No, neither of these teams. No.
Okay, now let's understand, and I know that you said that the Knicks are nowhere close to a championship, okay? I get that. Capologist coming in, right? I'm switching hats from analyst to capologist, okay? Let's assume the Knicks do not sign Carmelo Anthony this year.
Okay.
Do not. Okay? In 2015, so at the end of this year, so let's say they lose probably every game this year, right? Minus like 10, because they can't be worse than the new Charlotte Hornets, the old Charlotte Bobcats, formerly known as the Charlotte Hornets, now the Charlotte Hornets again, somewhere in there. They have $0 besides Tim Hardaway Jr. on their cap at the end of this year. Zero. That's a pretty good starting point.
It is.
Cap room is not everything. But it certainly is much easier to get guys when you have the cap room than to try and get guys when you don't.
I agree, but it's one thing having cap room. It's another thing not having a team. And, you know, you want cap room, obviously, to bring in the free agents. New York, you know, it will always be a very attractive place for that, as will, I guess, Brooklyn in 2018 when they're cleared off the cap. But I find it pretty difficult to, you know, you're not an expansion team either. And, you know, to have a team with one player is – do they have a draft pick in 16?
The Knicks in 16 do have a draft pick. You mean in 15 or in 16?
In 15, excuse me.
15, they have to swap their pick with I believe they swapped their pick with Toronto. I'm going to look it up right now, but I believe that's the Bargnani math travesty. But I'm going to look it up right now. But moving on. So I know that the Nets don't have a pick until, like, 2025. So, I mean,
I was going to say, the Nets don't have a pick until my kid is going to be running for presidency or is of age to run for presidency. The Nets are in a lot of trouble. The only trade bait they really have is Brook Lopez. And it's kind of dangerous to trade a 7-foot center who's young, but, you know, he is brittle. Neither team, I think, is in particularly good shape. And cap room is nice, but I was not, you know, was.
Wait, the Knicks do have their 2015 pick. Woo-hoo! Maybe they should not sign Carmelo. Their 2016 pick is the Nuggets have the right to swap it And the 2017 pick is the Knicks have actually, 2017 pick. The Raptors have the right to swap the second round pick. Huh. Interesting. I thought they had the 16. Oh, well. Only a second round. I thought it was a first round. My bad. This year, the Knicks don't have a pick. Just that simple. And we'll be doing our NBA preview, NBA draft preview, which is probably my favorite show, in a couple of weeks. So stay tuned to that to see who we believe is going to be the first pick in the draft in one of probably the crazier drafts that we've seen. But then again, last year, Anthony Bennett went number one, and I guarantee you...
Did you say Anthony Pettit?
I said Anthony Bennett. Bennett.
Oh, it sounded like Pettit. And the only reason I say that is because Anthony Pettit is a UFC champion, and the idea that you would actually misquote an NBA player for a UFC fighter is beyond my thought process. We also have a guest next week, and this will be the first time that Mr. Palmer has heard this, but Little Penny is joining us.
Who?
Anthony Hardaway.
Joining us when?
Next week. On our radio show. Yeah. How about that? Little Penny, one of the greater players of all time, a great player, who, if had been able to keep healthy, would have had a legitimate chance to be an all-time great. And he's joining our little show next week.
Truth be told, Anthony Hardaway is probably part of two of the biggest trades of all time. One was the Chris Webber deal, which was actually, like, talent-wise, the biggest trade. And I believe the trade with the Knicks had, like, 11 players in it. So that was, like, quantity or quality. He was in one of the biggest trades quantity-wise and one of the biggest trades quantity-wise as well, or quality-wise. So
he will be joining our little show.
What's that?
They said he will be joining the show next week. And we'll talk.
Fantastic.
We'll talk draft. We'll talk NBA finals. We'll just talk in general. So about halfway through the show, you didn't actually. What are your thoughts on Derek Fisher becoming the coach of the New York Knicks?
Well, first, let's say it's if call in at 760-283-0846, we're going to delay our bucket list for 5 more minutes while we discuss Derek Fisher, and then we'll get back to that. So. 760-283-0846. Derek Fisher as the Knicks coach. Well, the Knicks have an abundance of money. Let's remember that, number one. So I laugh a lot when people say, well, they signed him to a 5-year, $25 million contract. Trust me, if Derek Fisher doesn't work out after 2 years, James Dolan will have no problem eating $15 million. Not a big deal. For those that do not know, that does not go on the cap. So no big deal. He's not a player coach. So this is one of the few ways that the Knicks can throw their money around, which they were not able to do under many other ways. I think he's the best of a bad situation. I mean, you knew Jeff Van Gundy wasn't coming. You knew that no reputable coach was going to come to the Knicks to be Phil Jackson's lackey. And that's basically what Derek Fisher is, right? For all intents and purposes, you're going to be my conduit to the players because I don't want to sit on the bench. I got no problem with a conduit. And I'll tell you, he probably gets a whole lot more respect than Steve Kerr will.
I agree. It's not a great situation. It probably is the best they could deal with, they could get at this point. He's someone who he's a name that's kind of been bandied around the coaching thought process for the last couple of years, even though he's still been a contributor and a valuable one for teams like Oklahoma City and the Lakers. He does have credibility with the players. He has credibility all over the place, with the players, with management. You know, he is And I mean, the one thing you did know that was that Phil Jackson was going to take it was going to take someone off of his family, off of his tree. I actually read today that Rick Fox, of all people, was an option as well. So you knew, and you also have to figure that Fisher will bring in a coach like a Jim Clemens, who was an assistant for Phil Jackson for 20 some odd years, was a head coach for a couple of years. He's going to bring in he'll bring in the Kurt Rambis player, people along those lines. Again, part of the Phil Jackson tree, and disciples of the triangle and everything that Phil Jackson stands for. I think it's a reasonable.
Yeah, let's assume that the Knicks do not sign Carmelo Anthony. I think the best game is going to be during practice, because I think the coaches may be able to beat the team. I mean, you got a starting lineup of possibly Derek Fisher, Jim Clemens, Rick Fox, Kurt Rambis, and Bill Cartwright. That's not bad. Starting five, I'll take that over Amari Stoudemire, J.R. Smith, who doesn't want to come off the bench, although he's a Sixth Man of the Year award. Iman Shumpert, Tim Hardaway III, and whoever else we're throwing out. Oh, yeah, that's it. You know what? I think Derek Fisher will be a great coach for Andre Bargnani. You know why? Can you guess?
I don't have the slightest idea.
Well, because they both play the same type of defense.
None.
Style. Right, basically. So, anyway. So, 7:36 on the hour. And we got 24 minutes to go. So, where I came up with this idea of the bucket list. Well, last week I went to probably one of the few places that was on my bucket list. I was at Wrigley Field a week ago today. And if you haven't been to Wrigley, it's everything you want in a baseball stadium. I'll post some pictures on our Facebook page. It's everything that you want in a stadium and none of the frills. You're actually watching the game, and you're talking baseball. I sat in the bleachers, and the bleachers are general admission. Show me another place that's not a college stadium that has general admission tickets. It was a fantastic experience. I went twice. I went both Tuesday and Wednesday. Saw the Mets lose. My Chicago office is begging me to come back because it's the first series sweep that Chicago's had in like 5 years. And, of course, I was there for two out of the three games. So they're begging me to come back. Maybe the Cubs will win a World Series if I move there. And, if I had to pick another place on my bucket list, I'm thinking it's Lambeau Field, and I'm probably going there, too, in the fall. What's on your bucket list, Seth? And then we'll get to the listeners.
Cameron Indoor, which I will probably never get to. I would like – let me think. I'd really like to go to an SEC football game. I'm not sure if it would be to go to Legion Hare in Alabama, maybe to go to LSU. Down in Death Valley.
Syracuse plays at LSU in 2015 or 16. So if you want to go, I'm in.
Fair enough. I would love to go to a soccer game or a football game at Wembley Stadium. Soldier Field doesn't really hold that much appeal for me because it would be negative 37 degrees to sit through. I don't know. I think we actually asked this question about a year ago. That's why I was laughing when you brought it back up. But I'd love to go to the Azteca, which is where the Mexican national team plays. I'd love to go – well, I guess Montreal doesn't really play at the Forum anymore. I do like the idea of the historical stadiums. I love Fenway. I love Wrigley Field. Of the new – I mean, I don't get much of a thrill out of MSG, but, I know other people do. I posted it late, and actually Brian from New Jersey posted Augusta, which makes a heck of a lot of sense for me. If you're a golf fan, is there any place better to go than Augusta National down in Georgia?
No. Ladies and gentlemen, Seth Kamen's bucket is bigger than all of us combined, because I think he named like 20 places just now. So that's a huge bucket list. So you better have a son, because if you have a daughter, you're not going anywhere. Just throwing that out there. But anyway, well, there were a couple others that came up. Augusta came up a couple of times in my travels. And you're right. Is there any place better to go? And it's one of the harder tickets in the country to get, if not the hardest ticket. My best friend, Eric, who lives in Ohio, who I've known longer than any other person alive except for my family, has, if I'm going to get him a gift and I can find my way to do it, I think he would pass out if I got him tickets to Augusta. I have gotten him tickets to practice rounds before and then had to sell them because he was interested but not interested enough to make the trip. If I could get him a pass to Augusta for the one of the rounds, that would be the greatest gift ever, I believe. And he has two kids, and I still think it would be better than those. Another friend of mine, Casey Moffitt, said Santa Anita, a horse track, which never really came up on my radar. Do you have any inclination to go to Churchill Downs? Now, I've been to Churchill Downs, not for the Kentucky Derby,
I've been there as well.
Now, when you said all those places that you want to go visit, I assume you want to go to a game there, not just go there.
Yeah, I mean, if we're just going to keep it at one or two, I'd love to go to Wembley, and I'd love to go to Cameron. Those would be the two.
But do you care who they're playing at, Cameron?
Well, I'd love to go to Duke, North Carolina, but I'm a realist. I'd like to go to an ACC game there.
Okay.
The problem, to be fair, is that apparently Duke fans don't really care unless it's North Carolina. And this is what I've read, that their fans have become almost absent, for lack of a better term, unless it's a game against North Carolina or perhaps, you know, coming forward a Syracuse or a Louisville, where it's teams in the top five or six, top ten in the country. And, yes, I'm putting Syracuse up there, so... yeah, but to see Duke versus, you know, Alcorn State isn't very interesting, of course. You know, then again, I guess Alcorn State has beaten Duke 2 out of the last 3 years.
I was about to say, unless Alcorn State wins, and then it becomes very interesting.
That is true.
But,
you know, Wembley, I wouldn't care. I'd just like to see a game there.
Other people that have chimed in, my coworker Rick said that he would like to go to the Barcelona Stadium and see Real Madrid versus Barcelona, which I
Camp
think
now.
A lot is, what's that?
It's called Camp Nou, I believe, N-O-U.
And I asked him, I said, would it matter who was playing? And he said, yes, I'd want to see that game. So I'm not necessarily sure if that's a bucket list of a stadium or that's a bucket list of a game, because I think that there's a distinct difference, because I liked going to see the Mets versus the Cubs at Wrigley, but I really wouldn't have cared who was playing.
Right.
I've gone to Fenway numerous times without caring who was playing. I just went to Fenway. And the fact that I'm going to Lambeau for the Jets game, or I'm hoping to go to Lambeau for the Jets game, if I happened to be in Milwaukee and went to Lambeau at some other time, I don't think it would matter.
Sure.
Does it add special appeal to be my team? Sure. But I don't think it would matter if it did or didn't. For some of the people that I have talked to, it certainly does matter who is playing.
But let me ask you something. Would you go to Lambeau Field? Would you fly from New York to Green Bay if it wasn't the Jets for a random game?
If given the opportunity, I'd probably fly from New York to Chicago to see the Jets, or New York to Miami to see the Jets. Is it because they're in Lambeau Field that I'd go? Yeah. But it's not, like I said, I wouldn't take the trip just to go to Lambeau Field, but I did take the trip to Wrigley. I would have taken it no matter what. It wouldn't have mattered that the Mets were playing or not. If the Mets didn't have a series there this year, I still would have gone. It wouldn't have mattered.
Right. But you were there. You happened to be in Chicago. You're never really going to have. Most likely, you're not going to happen to be in Green Bay.
That's correct. I mean, yours and my trip, when we're going to Seattle, they happen to play the Mets at Safeco. That's a coincidence. It was actually the only day that the trip worked. Well, we will be in Safeco Field when the Mets are there. I'm not going to Safeco to see the Mets. I'm going to Safeco to see Safeco. There's a big difference between the two as far as I'm concerned. And I think as far as baseball, it's a whole lot different because chances are every 3 or 4 years, your team will be at one of these stadiums. While in football and in basketball, college basketball, I guess, is a little different. But in football, certainly, the Jets may not see Lambeau for another 10 years. So,
sure.
Pretty important to me to go see that game. And so we're going to try that. I mean, we're making an attempt to iron out some other stadiums this year. Other stadiums that came up, or other venues that came up while I was talking, an Olympic Games, it doesn't really matter which one, but to me that's not a venue, that's an event.
True.
Fenway Park, obviously, for all the historical significance. The thing is, I did not hear any bucket list items that were not, unless they were an Olympic stadium, under 50 years old. It's all about history when it comes to bucket lists. And I'm not really sure how that plays with me. I think you can be excited to go to a stadium or excited to see a venue that's not necessarily a historical landmark. But that's just me. So anyway, moving on from that, and we'll have a question of the week next week as well. One that will obviously be related to the NBA because we'd like to get Little Penny's, now that I know he's joining the show, thanks for the heads up, that we'll get his opinion on it as well. But one of the biggest rivalries in sports, and I say this in sports because it's probably the biggest rivalry I've ever seen, is back. So after all the Big East was breaking up and that the rivalries were no longer going to be had, Syracuse announced today that coming back in 2015-2016, a four-game series with John Thompson the third, or maybe the fourth by that point. I don't even know.
I was gonna suggest John Thompson the sixth. But
no, it's only 2 years away. It can't be the sixth. That guy hasn't even been born yet. John Thompson, the third or fourth, Syracuse will be playing Georgetown again, which means that at least two, if not three, of the old rivalries, along with Villanova, are still in effect. Now, do you see any chance, and I'll bring this to your attention, because as a Maryland alum, your team is going to go through similar instances where you're going to lose rivalries, and you're going to want those rivalries to recover because you've had these rivalries for years. Do you see any way that Maryland signs contracts with Duke, North Carolina, Virginia, and Florida State, go on and on and on, with any of the old ACC rivals, or is this concept of we left and we're taking our bag with us the end of that?
Not a chance. Remember, when the Big East broke up, the Big East broke up. We'll just leave it at that. This was not Syracuse leaving the Big East and the Big East broke up. This was the Big East broke up. Syracuse goes to the ACC. You know, Louisville eventually goes to the ACC. UConn is stuck in nowhere land. Maryland left the ACC, fighting the $50 million fee, fighting this, fighting that. Lawsuits still going on left and right. Krzyzewski has said they'll never play. And I tend to agree. Our rivalry, according to him, we were not much of a rival. So I don't really see I don't see why we would play again. I mean, the ACC considered Virginia a rival. We barely did. So I don't see any great incentive on that end. We'll play them in the ACC Big East, the big ACC Big Ten challenges and things along those lines. But
there's a unified hatred in the ACC, or I should say unified indifference in the ACC against Maryland. And I don't see that. I don't see it coming back anytime soon. I would actually be genuinely shocked if it did. It's almost similar to Missouri going to the SEC and Missouri Kansas no longer playing because Kansas feels betrayed. Same idea. So to answer your question, no.
Will you miss them?
At times, it's fun to root against Duke. It's fun to hate North Carolina. But, you know, we knew – here is what everyone – it keeps going back to. Maryland did what they had to do. You know, I mean, they did. They were broke. Our brilliant athletic director, replaced by our currently brilliant athletic director, you know, helped put us $50 million in debt. The Big Ten, because of their cable contract, can help with that. And we couldn't even get a lousy ACC tournament after 60 years to be played in Washington, D.C. So,
and
you know, my
next year.
Yep. And as the ultimate FU to Maryland, the ACC is doing it next year in Washington, D.C. So, it's kind of hard to miss.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you know, look, Duke and North Carolina obviously didn't have too much respect for us, as they continuously stated. We didn't have a great deal of affinity for Virginia. And to be put, you know, to be thrown in with Pittsburgh as our new rival, we don't care. So, the rivalry, yeah.
You had just mentioned athletic directors, and something just came across Twitter to me. Now, granted, this was posted about an hour and a half, almost 2.5 hours ago. So in the past, as you are well aware, Syracuse fans could not get tickets to the Verizon Center for Georgetown because they either have to buy a three-pack or they'd have to donate money to Georgetown just to get a nosebleed seat. That was the point, right? So they would not have an all-orange crowd in Washington, D.C. For instance, it's almost 10 years ago now, I bought 125 tickets to the Georgetown game for Syracuse and got all my friends in. And basically, there was probably 85% orange there. So they decided to put in these implementations. Well, I'd love to give a high five to our athletic director, Darryl Rose. One of the sticking points in the deal is that there are no mandatory donations or three-game packages if SU fans want to go to the Verizon Center. Well done. That's called having your back. You know what? I have a lot of complaints for Darryl Gross and what he's done over the years, but high five to that. Great job by Darryl. Now, Debbie Yao, how about do something? Oh, no, Debbie Yao's at North Carolina State. Who's your AD?
Kevin Anderson.
Kevin Anderson, go hire Mike Leach. Oh, wait, that's not going to happen. Anyway.
Yeah, go hire Sean Miller. Ooh, we threw that one away. Yeah, good job, guys. So, but look, new rivalry, new opportunities for us. We'll see what happens. You know, there's not much more you can really say.
All right, so we got 5 minutes to go. 5 minutes? 7 minutes? Why do my clocks say different things? 5 minutes to go. So I'll go first, and then I will hand the ball off to you. So two things happened in the last couple of days. Number one, Amy Van Dyken, and I posted this on our website, suffered a broken spine. The Olympic swimmer won 8 gold medals over the course of the last 10 years and in an ATV accident. And she's got a long road ahead of her. We wish her the best. She was a sight to behold in the pool, and it was really unfortunate. And just before the show, I learned of the passing of Bob Welch. Bob Welch threw a home run ball to Reggie Jackson in 1977. He was 57 years old. He was the last player to win 25 games, going 25-7 with those Oakland Athletics in the mid-80s. And I got to tell you, I told Seth this before the show, he's really the first passing that makes me feel old. He makes me absolutely feel old. This is the guy who I collected his baseball card. This is a guy who should have won a Cy Young when he probably shouldn't have won a Cy Young, when wins counted more than today, before sabermetrics were part of the solution. Felix Hernandez never would have won a Cy Young in the 80s, ever. I think it was 1988, actually, that Welch won a Cy Young. Bob Welch pitched for the Dodgers. He pitched for the Oakland Athletics on those great teams with Dave Stewart, Rick Honeycutt, Dennis Eckersley, Jose Canseco, Mark McGuire. And like I said, I'm feeling a little old today. I'm feeling a little vulnerable. So may you rest in peace, Bob Welch, and know that you were a great fantasy player of mine in the 80s. And we send our condolences out to the Welch family.
Okay, two quick things. Also, in regards to Bob Welch, 27-10, if I remember correctly, in 1990.
No, you won 25 games, not 27.
Oh, it was 27. Look it up.
I will look that up while Seth keeps going.
Okay. Two quick notes. After 30 years of sports writing, Rick Riley is retiring as a sports writer. For Sports Illustrated, he was great. For ESPN, his time was a bit superseded by Bill Simmons. He lost a bit of his credibility, but at his best, and there's a great article in ESPN where they actually go back, they ask all these people what their favorite article by Rick Riley was, and all of them were written by Sports Illustrated. Go back and read one or two and see a truly great writer in his prime. And I also want to, play this because it's about that time. So everyone should remember this from 4 years ago.
We can't hear it. I have no idea what that is. Well, Seth was right in saying that he went 27-6 for the champion Oakland Athletics in 1990, won the Cy Young. I have absolutely no idea what that audio was that Seth just tried to do.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was supposed to be the U.S. scoring the goal in the World Cup 2010 again. I guess it didn't come through. Yeah, we didn't do much World Cup today because we did it a couple weeks ago. Yeah, it's World Cup time. To me, starts Thursday.
Yeah,
I will be out
Monday at 5:30.
For the U.S., it is Monday at 5:30. For the rest of the world, it starts Thursday at 4. I will happily be at a bar before then with some friends to watch the game. To me, it is my favorite national sporting event, or international sporting event, and maybe because I'm not a big fan of U.S. basketball because it's so easy for the U.S. in basketball. And watching U.S. soccer, I enjoy it immensely. Just watch, enjoy, and taking the cup. To my boy John Peterson, who's down in Brazil for the next month, Godspeed. Next week, World Cup, NBA Finals, Penny Hardaway, possibly a new day for our show. We'll fill you in later on. For Sean Palmer. Little Penny. Sean Palmer, Seth Kamens on the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show, backsportspage.com. Good night, everybody.
Little Penny.